$1 contribution, tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes to keeping WBAI alive. Make your call now. You don't have to know when you can do this, but make the call, 516-620-3602. Special thanks to Amy Littlefield, Sam Alkoff, Steve Martinez, Miguel Noguera, Julie Crosby, and all the gang that makes Democracy Now! Happen here. 516-620-3602. Keep calling in. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
And you are listening to WBAI New York, where the time is 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. Getting to our program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Good evening.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Alex.
Evening.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Well, this story just isn't dying, is it? This whole NSA thing just keeps on giving. And I don't know where to begin this time. There's just so many angles at which we can attack this. Let's start with the most recent thing, unless I miss something. The most recent thing was the leader of, this is just too good to believe. The leader of Bolivia's plane was forced to land in Austria because somebody thought that Edward Snowden was on it. Am I wrong so far on anything I'm saying?
Well, he was flying from Moscow, where he was at some conference, to back to Bolivia.
And Snowden was at a conference?
No, Evo Morales.
Well, yeah, the leader of Bolivia, all right.
Yeah, was flying.
Well, somebody got confused. Now, who was it who told somebody that Ed Snowden was on that plane? Come on, fess up. Who did it?
Not me.
Well, somebody did it. Somebody got word out and was believed. How do you do that? How do you tell somebody that somebody's on a plane and get them to believe it? And do we believe that the United States is the one behind this? I don't see how it could be anybody else. Alex?
Well, one thing that's very interesting is that the U.S., as far as I know, last time I checked, hasn't made any statement about this. I mean, is that still correct to this point?
They haven't talked to me. Anyone have heard from the U.S. lately? Bernie?
The U.S. Is reportedly not commented on this in any news media outlet I've read, and I've read a bunch of them.
No comment from the United States.
But what other country does France, and what was the other country that...
Portugal.
What other country is...
Well, they landed in Vienna.
Right.
So I imagine that means that Austria said, okay, we're not going to let you run out of fuel. You can land here.
Well, the plane would have run out of fuel pretty well, and that would have been even worse if the plane crashed. But, I mean, they only allowed the plane to land there with the agreement that the plane be searched upon landing for Ed Snowden, he was nowhere to be found on the plane.
I'll get to that in a second, but I'm just curious about one thing. They were flying from Moscow to Bolivia. What was the original plan? Were they going to stop somewhere for fuel? I don't have a map of Europe ingrained in my eyelids, but I'm pretty sure that...
I mean, apparently this plane cannot make it all the way from Moscow to Bolivia without stopping.
So where were they going to stop?
President Morales didn't tell me.
Okay, well, we can look up the flight plan, I suppose, since everybody else was able to do this. Rob?
I did find the quote in the article in the UK Guardian that just says the White House said the issue was a matter for European authorities and declined to comment further.
But what amazed me is how so many countries just fell into lockstep with what the United States wanted them to do, including Russia. Russia saying, yeah, you know, he can stay here, but he has to stop embarrassing the United States. First of all, I don't know if he can stop embarrassing the United States. It's pretty much in free fall now. He released all this information to the media, and believe it or not, they have not released it all themselves. They're holding on to it. I don't know what they're holding on to it for. I'm not sure he's able to release anything else, but he still turned down that offer, apparently because it just didn't seem right to do something like that. Alex?
No, I think, you know, this is an obvious tactic here. We have another absolute diplomatic blunder, quite possibly on the part of the State Department, once again, or some senior official in the administration. Now, I'm hoping Bernie can probably, you know, make a few phone calls and figure out who it was this week that gave the erroneous information to whatever the flight plan was, and come back to us next week and, you know, with an actual name here. But I think the real important thing here, though, is that the lack of commenting is an obvious attempt to hope this story goes away. And I think it's important to stay on it. I think it's important to investigate this because it seems absolutely ridiculous. You can't make it up.
It's really a big deal, too, in places like Bolivia. They're pretty outraged by the whole thing. The official comment, we don't know who invented this lie. We want to denounce the international community injustice with the plane of President Evo Morales. And of course, they're blaming the United States pretty directly for doing this in the first place. So it's a huge incident. And try to imagine if shoes were on other feet. If this was, say, a Chinese dissident trying to get to freedom someplace, and his plane was intercepted. I mean, he wasn't even on this plane. But let's say the plane of a leader that was suspected of carrying this person. Let's say it's Air Force One. Why not? Air Force One forced to land because China believes that there might be a dissident on board. So they're forced to take the touchdown someplace just so their plane can be searched. Would that maybe evoke some reaction here? Bernie, what do you think?
Well, I think it might evoke a reaction from the U.S. fighter jets and bombers that continually shadow Air Force One. So I don't think that Bolivia's airplane is surrounded by fighter jets and bombers willing to blow up anybody that would interfere with its travel.
But now, Bernie, though, I think we may have to give President Obama some credit here, because didn't he say just a few days ago that he would not scramble jets to go after some 29-year-old hacker?
Yeah, but he's 30 years old. So
right, exactly.
He's very clever. He turned 30 while this whole thing was going on. So
I was being sarcastic, of course.
He will do it for a 30-year-old. So keep alert to that. I don't know. The whole thing is just really incredible. Before that, you know, the main thrust of what we're going to talk about tonight was what was released over the last few days, namely evidence that the United States is spying on its allies in the European Union, which also caused all kinds of consternation, and a complete admission from Obama saying, yeah, that's what intelligence agencies do. You know, this kind of thing happens, and everybody does it. I just don't think everybody does it is really the right way to excuse yourself from something that's quite clearly wrong. I mean, I'm always told not to use that as an excuse.
I'm going to use that defense next time I'm in court in front of a judge. It's like, Your Honor, everybody's doing it.
Yeah, everybody walks around in an open container. Everybody drives over the speed limit. Everybody does these things. We all turn a blind eye to it.
You know, I so rarely defend the president, but he's sort of right on this one. The point of these intelligence agencies is to spy on each other, and it doesn't bother me nearly as much as it bothers me when they spy on, you know, us.
Why should we be any different? If they're going to spy on Europeans, why shouldn't they spy on
us? No, I mind when they spy on European citizens, but if they spy on European governments and European intelligence agencies, I don't care.
What about UN missions?
I thought they spied on the EU, which is...
Apparently there was a UN facility that was found to have been spied on as well. And that's not the first time the U.S. has done that either, frankly.
Or the British, Bernie. Don't forget that the British supposedly were caught bugging Kofi Annan several years ago as well. But, you know, I think, you know, quite honestly, I mean, shockingly enough, I have to agree with Mike here. I think that this outrage, I think this disingenuous Teutonic outrage about spying on allies is just quite simply, I think it's silly. And in my opinion, and I respectfully disagree, Manuel, I think it is somewhat naive to think that friends don't spy on each other. I mean, it does, in fact, happen all the time. We have to look at China and Russia. We know that they're very, very good at collecting intelligence.
I saw what you said in your private email that I was reading earlier.
That's right. Israel, think about Israel a couple of years ago. They're fantastic at collecting intelligence. They even recruited, I think it was Pollard, who was subsequently convicted of...
Okay, well, you know what? We can't have it both ways. So it's no big deal. Then what's everybody upset about? Then Snowden should be let go.
Well, exactly. I mean, and think about what they're spying on. They're spying on EU trade talks. There probably couldn't be anything more boring. I mean, that's like tapping C-SPAN for information.
How about this? The United States taps 500 million phone calls, emails, and text messages in Germany in a typical month and has classed its biggest European ally as a target similar to China. That's according to some secret U.S. documents that were quoted in German in a German news magazine. The revelations of alleged U.S. surveillance programs based on documents taken by a fugitive former National Security Agency contractor, a lot of descriptions to his name now, Edward Snowden, have raised a political furor in the United States and abroad over the balance between privacy rights and national security. The document that Der Spiegel cited showed that the United States categorized Germany as a third-class partner. Ooh. Ouch, that hurts. And that surveillance there was stronger than in any other EU country, similar in extent to China, Iraq, or Saudi Arabia. I just don't see them taking that well. I mean, you can say everybody does it, and that's what the game is all about, but when you hear what they really think of you in no uncertain terms,
imagine,
it's going to have a reaction. Bernie.
That third-class partner is actually a quantifiably true statement. As I mentioned on the show a couple weeks ago, there's something called the UK-USA Alliance, which is five countries with electronic spying organizations, the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, and New Zealand. And it's a three-tiered system. The United States is the only country on the top tier. The second tier is Canada, the UK, Australia, and New Zealand. And all the other countries.
Who put us on the top tier? I'm just curious about that.
I'm sorry?
Who put us on the top tier?
The U.S., because it's the U.S. This is what the U.S. came up with back in about 50 years ago.
Okay, so it's our tier. We built all the tiers.
Yes,
and, okay,
yes,
got it.
But it's an agreement that these five countries in the UK-USA alliance have formed amongst its electronic spying agencies. And so the U.S. is the only one in the top tier. The second tier is Canada, the U.K., Australia, and New Zealand. And all the other countries are third tier.
It sounds like they just picked all the English-speaking countries.
Yes, that has a lot to do with it, I would guess. But that's why Germany was described as a third-tier country. It wasn't just sort of a random insult. It literally is a third-tier country insofar as the UK-USA alliance is concerned.
Well, it says third class, but I guess that's basically the same thing. They seem a bit indignant about it. But also, Germany's federal prosecutor's office said it was preparing to bring charges against both British and U.S. intelligence amid fresh allegations that the services spied far more extensively than thought. So that's a key phrase, I think, on both German phone and internet traffic and bugged European Union offices in America. So, I don't think this is necessarily what everybody knew was going on. I think it might be a bit more insidious than that.
I mean, I do want to distinguish between spying on the German government, which I don't care about, and spying on the German people, which I do care about. And I think the German government definitely wants to conflate those two so that the outrage that we feel against spying on normal citizens will also be channeled into this outrage about spying on the EU trade talks. But from my perspective, they're quite different.
I also agree with that statement, shockingly enough, as well. And I think that, we also have to remember here that there are elections coming up in Germany, and all of these statements, foreign policy basically is dictated by domestic politics. So to whom are these statements directed? I mean, I don't necessarily think they're directed to their allies in the EU or the United States. I don't think much is going to come of this, to be honest with you, because, as Mike rightly pointed out, a lot of the surveillance was directed against the German government. The acquisition of communications of the German people, that's another thing, and I don't necessarily agree with that either. But I think this is political capital being spent over there in Germany, and I don't think it's really going to amount to much.
Well, also, we had this development. Director of National Intelligence James Clapper has apologized for telling Congress that the National Security Agency doesn't gather data on millions of Americans. The apology comes after former NSA contractor Edward Snowden gave top secret information to newspapers that last month proved that James Clapper is a liar. I'm sorry. I strayed from the script. Let me go back. Published stories about the federal government collecting the data from phone calls and such internet communications as emails. Clapper apologized in a letter to Senate Intelligence Committee Chairwoman Dianne Feinstein that was posted Tuesday on the website of Clapper's office. He said in the June 21st letter that his answer was clearly erroneous. Americans have long known the United States implemented surveillance programs under the Patriot Act in the wake of 9/11 with the goal of preventing more terror attacks and that the programs targeted foreign and overseas suspects. However, many Americans seem stunned at the apparent extent of the program and that the broad data collection included basic details on Americans' phone records. He's sorry, and I guess he gets away with it now. Is that how we play this game?
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some like sports figures who were testifying about drugs and sports, which I guess is important to some people, and they got charged when they lied to Congress. But I guess if what you're lying about is as important as the U.S. government spying on millions and millions of Americans, that's not a concern.
Well, I just thought I'd like to go over this a little bit more in detail. What happened was Oregon Democratic Senator Ron Wyden asked Clapper at a March 12th congressional hearing whether the NSA collects any type of data at all on millions of Americans. I think it's just a bad
transcript. I think he said millions or hundreds of millions.
Okay. But then he said millions again, but whatever. He asked because Clapper suggested publicly months earlier that stories about the NSA keeping dossiers on millions of Americans were completely false. Clapper told Wyden, "No, sir, it does not." When asked for clarification, he said, "Not wittingly." After the latest stories appeared to reveal otherwise, Clapper said he gave, and this is a quote, "the least untruthful answer possible." That's when you know he's working for the federal government. He can say a phrase like that. Clapper said in the letter to Feinstein that when answering, he was confounded by the word dossier and challenged. It's a confounding word, isn't it? Challenge. You look confounded, Mike. Are you confounded?
So I watched this clip. It's like maybe less than a minute long of Wyden asking the question. And Wyden is so careful to ask exactly the question that he knows the answer to has to be yes, because he knows the games that Clapper plays. So the reason dossier was in the question was Wyden specifically saying, ignore the word dossier. It is not what I'm asking about. I don't know what you guys think it means. He is saying, do you collect any information at all? Clapper lies and says no. And Wyden, you can tell, you can see his face. He knows he's being lied to, but he doesn't want to, betray his security clearance and say, hey, you're lying. You told me this yesterday in the closed session.
What would happen if he did? What would happen if he said that that's not true, that you're lying?
I don't know.
Be charged? Would he then be on the run like Snowden because he's telling the truth?
He would maybe be doing his job.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, he would be doing his job.
Why isn't the only one who's doing his job? Let's give him some credit.
All right. Well, let me finish this. Clapper said in the letter to Feinstein that when answering, he was confounded by that word and challenged by trying to protect classified information. He also said that when answering Wyden, he was focused on whether the U.S. collected the content of phone and email conversations and not so-called metadata, which essentially is phone numbers, email addresses, dates, and times. He wrote that he simply didn't think of the pertinent section of the Patriot Act under which that information can be collected. Thus, my response was clearly erroneous, for which I apologize, he said in the letter. And Snowden's father, meanwhile, chastised Clapper for his answers in an open letter Snowden sent Tuesday to his son. We leave it to the American people to decide whether you or Director Clapper is the superior patriot. And that's something I think we should all think about for a moment.
I mean, you know, these people lie all the time. I don't know how much we should harp on this one lie. But Wyden submitted the question to Clapper a day in advance. He gave him a chance to amend his answer after he was lied to. There is no excuse Clapper can give. This was a total lie, and he would have been able to get away with it were it not for the revelations from Snowden, and he should just say so.
Yeah, and that also shows the importance of the things that were revealed, in that they're forcing people to tell the truth. And if it's no big deal, like they keep saying, then why are they so upset by the fact that they were revealed in the first place? You have to wonder. Rob.
Yeah, and that's what's really striking me about all this. Even the coverage of stuff like this, what coverage there is of it, seems to me to be downplaying the whole fact that this is because of Edward Snowden that we know this. And instead, the Snowden coverage is all like really fantastic, where is he going, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego type stuff. But while, all the while, we're trying to paint him as some kind of terrorist who has hurt the government. I think a quote from George W. Bush was exactly that, he hurt America. And we're not talking about the fact that we know that we've been lied to because of him. And that's the issue here.
And on the subject of Snowden, he has applied for sanctuary in 21 different countries, I believe, and nobody has said yes. I cannot believe that countries aren't lining up. Well, actually, I can believe it because this is the world we live in, where the United States does tend to intimidate everybody. Nobody is stepping forward. Nobody is daring to stand up to the United States and say, we'll take him, we'll protect him, we'll keep him safe, and we'll honor him as somebody who actually reveals things that need to be revealed. Nobody will do that. Sad. Alex.
You know, I think, you know, one of the immediate consequences of the grounding of this very, very high-profile flight, it may be that in places like Bolivia or Venezuela, this may hasten the asylum process. This may actually encourage them to go forward with this a hell of a lot more quickly than they would otherwise have done, just to ensure that the United States continues to get mud in its eye. But on one hand, you have Ecuador, who appears to be somewhat cooling to the idea of asylum. We're taking a more measured approach to it. And on the other hand, you have Bolivia, who's absolutely fuming about the grounding of its plane. You know, and I think it would be wonderful if they came out and said, you know what, we're going to grant asylum. You know, we think this was an immediate affront, an overreaction, and now what are you going to do about that?
At this point, I think his best bet might be to stay in Russia. Because while that condition that Putin put down as far as not revealing any more secrets about the United States seems very unpalatable, it's not very hard to do that if you've already given a lot of the information to the press. It's up to the press to do that. He could do well in Russia. He could be protected there. It's a big place, you know, and he's already there, too. So there's a lot of advantages. You see what the United States will do if he tries to go anywhere. So it's and something also that Julian Assange should take note of, that the United States is ready to step in at any moment if you make one false move. So it's I just cannot believe that somebody fell for this. How that information was given out, it was like it was a test or something to see just what the United States, what cards the United States would play in a situation like that. And now we know.
It reminds me a lot of last week when I think the story was that a rumor surfaced that he might be on a certain plane to Cuba. So a whole plane full of journalists, pushed each other out of the way to get onto that plane and ended up just in limbo for 11 hours and have to stay in Cuba for 3 days.
Are they still there? Did they come back? Does anybody know?
None of them called me.
Wow.
It's expensive to make phone calls from Cuba.
It is expensive, and it's frustrating to take, an 11-hour flight with no alcohol, which is what that flight turned out to be from Russia, too. Meanwhile, our friends over at the Electronic Privacy Information Center, joined by leading privacy and technology experts, including James Bamford, the author of The Puzzle Palace, all about the NSA, Whitfield Diffie and Bruce Schneier, have petitioned the National Security Agency to suspend domestic surveillance programs pending public comment. According to recently released classified documents, the NSA is engaging in programs that monitor U.S. phone calls and other forms of electronic communication, implicating the First and Fourth Amendment rights of millions of American citizens. EPIC's petition states, NSA's collection of domestic communications contravenes the First and Fourth Amendments to the United States Constitution and violates several federal privacy laws, including the Privacy Act of 1974 and Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978 as amended. EPIC filed the petition as a request for formal rulemaking under the Administrative Procedure Act, which states that agency actions that substantially affect the rights of U.S. citizens must go through a systematic public notice and comment process before being enacted. Alex, let me ask you, is this fantasy? Is this something that that has a chance of actually gaining some traction?
I think absolutely not, unfortunately. Trying to use the APA, the Administrative Procedure Act, to force disclosures from the National Security Agency is like trying to use a spork to open a bank vault or something. I mean, it's not going to work, but it will be a bee in their bonnet, so to speak. I think that EPIC had said that they will continually file these requests or make these petitions until they get an answer. So the lack of an answer will at least draw some light on the fact that the NSA is not answering the questions. But I doubt, this does not have a snowball's chance in hell, in my opinion, of actually acquiring any information.
But I think that's what about stuff like this and movements like this is to get the public comment going, to get people talking about it, to get it out in the open about what's going on and what, if anything, we can do about it. Because, if the government's not going to listen to us, maybe the public will.
And, you know, Rob, I think you're absolutely right there. And you know, and I have to say this, you know, as a lawyer, I really come to think that to contest surveillance in the courts is really just the wrong forum here. And what lawsuits like this should be doing are exactly what you said, bringing to light information or the lack thereof. And the ultimate forum that a program like this, a program of massive surveillance, should be contested in is the political forum. And this goes back to the oversight accountability that we were just talking about, where really we have one member of the Senate who hasn't abdicated his responsibility in favor of party politics to protect the United States from these massive surveillance programs. I think these people should be, the people that are abdicating their responsibility should be held politically accountable. They should be fired in the midterm election.
We have two.
It's two. Not, oh, sure. Yeah, two, exactly.
Yes, also, Senator right. Udall from Colorado.
I'm told Bernie S. wants to say something, but Bernie, you're potted up. Can you not? Can we hear you? We can't hear him for some reason.
How sad.
You see, it's
yeah.
potted up.
Yeah, look at that.
Bernie West, you're on the phone. I see you. Can you
maybe his phone is muted.
Hit a touch tone if you can hear me. How about that?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay,
where'd you go? Did you take a bathroom break or something?
Maybe I was drooling into the microphone too much and it clogged the
Yeah, that can happen. What?
Quick question.
Yes.
We missed one point. We were talking about all the debugging going on. The actual embassy where Julian Assange is holed up was found to have been bugged recently. The Ecuadorian government is not saying which country they think did it, but I think it's pretty clear it's part of the UK-USA alliance. And, you know, so we don't know. It's very possible. It was the actual ambassador's office that the microphone was found in.
Uh-huh.
But my guess is there's other microphones that are there. Probably the very room that Julian Assange is living in is bugged as well. So that's interesting. And also, I think I can't help thinking that Ed Snowden's strategy of asking 21 separate countries for political asylum is it's kind of like some guy at a party going around asking 21 girls or guys if he can go home with them. It doesn't seem like necessarily the best strategy, but he's kind of desperate, and I have all sympathies for him.
And a whole lot less sleazy, too.
Oh, absolutely. He's desperate, and he has, you know, he should go somewhere. But to touch on what Alex just said about a political solution and this not being handled in the courts, the only way we're going to find out, I don't think any lawsuits are going to find anything out about surveillance being made on us. I think the best way for people to find out about this stuff is for people like Ed Snowden and Bradley Manning to continue doing their civic duty to leak information to the public about what our government is actually doing to us. And that's what the government's afraid of. Is I think Ed Snowden just recently said in a statement, U.S. isn't really afraid of people like him, and I'm paraphrasing. He said the U.S. is really afraid of us, the American public, reacting strongly against what people like him are publicizing.
Absolutely, and I certainly don't think it would hurt to have 100 more people like Ed Snowden start revealing some information, too, so all the weight doesn't fall on one person. So that people realize that this is huge, this is something that people need to know about, and our government can't keep secrets from us and from the world and expect no fallout whatsoever. Yes, Alex, did you have some?
Sure, just to go back to what Bernie said, you know, I think there's possibly, and I've given this some thought, one way that a potential lawsuit or a prosecution, rather, could actually shed some light on this, because this incidental collection, which is massive, the incidental collection of American citizens' communications pursuant to the PRISM program, it's certainly incidental, but it's not accidental. And it has been said that information that the NSA comes across that could basically be used, you know, that concerns crimes being committed are going to be forwarded over to the FBI. And if that criminal information results in a prosecution, then somebody could actually contest the right of the government to originally collect that information in the first place.
Okay. We also have this from TechDirt, which someone sent in. The FCC has announced new rules saying that the mobile operators must protect the privacy of their users, including around various metadata. This is a quote. When mobile carriers use their control of customers' devices to collect information about customers' use of the network, including using pre-installed apps, carriers are required to protect that information. That's the FCC speaking. This sensitive information can include phone numbers that a customer has called and received calls from, the duration of calls, and the phone's location at the beginning and end of each call. Now, according to TechTorrent, this came out ostensibly in response to an investigation by the FCC into the use of services like Carrier IQ by various mobile carriers, whereby they were collecting a ton of data about how everyone used their phones. However, when put into the context of the news of the month, the federal government's dragnet surveillance efforts, which involves pretty much gathering up all metadata on every single phone call made, it suddenly becomes somewhat interesting. On the one hand, you have the administration and its defenders claiming that there's no expectation of privacy in metadata like phone numbers, duration of calls, and the phone's location, and yet now you have the FCC, also a part of the same administration, flat out telling the world and the telcos that there's clearly an expectation of privacy in exactly the same information. And, of course, once you have that expectation of privacy, the Fourth Amendment applies, no matter how many times the NSA says otherwise. So, brilliant there. Thank you, TechDirt, for that.
Maybe we can take this analysis and combine it with the Administrative Procedures Act proceedings and you know, have a big party of the NSA not caring what we think.
Well, yes. But the thing is, I don't want to be so hopeless about it all. I think we can make a difference. I think, yeah, they have a lot of power. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of technology. They're building more and more. But look at what happened in Egypt today. Okay, people speaking up can make a difference. It's just we got to wake up and start speaking. Alex?
You know, I think there is an element of hopelessness here. I think you're absolutely right, Emmanuel. But I think this is indicative of a general cultural attitude to the release of data here. I mean, we are constantly giving away our data, and we always talk about this. We give it to Google, we give it to Netflix, we give it to Dwayne Reed, we give it to King Cullen. We're just constantly giving it out. And they collect it, and they use it. And so it seems that it shouldn't be worrying when the government does exactly the same thing, when the government is collecting and using our data. So here we are. We're a bunch of data nudists for the most part.
Wow.
And, yeah, data nudists. And now we're complaining about a draft. I mean, it doesn't really make a lot of logical sense. You know, we
am I the only one that just gives fake information to all those entities that you mentioned? Because I never give them real information.
I always say my zip code is 90210.
Rob?
I have kind of a different reaction to all this. I think the FCC thing in particular, it sort of gives me a little more hope because it makes me realize that, yeah, there are even people involved in government agencies who are taking the common sense attitude that, okay, this stuff is private. And it's not this all-pervasive attitude throughout the whole government that, okay, this is – and obviously the NSA is more powerful than the FCC, and obviously I should be more afraid of one than the other. But it also means that maybe some common sense will leak its way through. Maybe the fact that there is this disagreement within the government, the fact that this paradox, this bit of doublethink exists in the administration will prompt more of the public to realize, hey, this is maybe a bit stupid. This is maybe silly.
All right. Go ahead, Mike.
I usually don't mind being seen to think that the situation is hopeless, but in this case, I don't think the situation is hopeless. I think that we're at the very early days of trying to stop the NSA, and I think it is possible we will succeed if people are aware of the Church Commission in the 60s, which was the first thing to stop the NSA before they ramped back up again. That took years, and I think it's going to take years this time as well. Which doesn't mean I think it's impossible, but I think to pretend that, like, you know, filing a piece of paper or the FCC even is going to be the thing that stops it is a bit naive.
Okay, well, we just have to remind people that their voices do matter, and they got to raise them, and they have to think about what this all means and where it's going to go. Where are we going to be in 10 years at this rate? You know, how much privacy will there be at all? So a couple of developments. Apparently, more of the slides from the prison program have been released by the Washington Post. Anybody see this? I just glanced at it today, and ugly slides as always in the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, I guess people who are good at communicating don't generally get hired by the NSA.
No, apparently not. Again, I have not looked at this. So I don't know if there's any smoking guns as far as Google's connection. I'll toss it over to you there. Oops, sorry. And if you see anything that's...
There's a little bit more information about how it works, which is that they go through the FBI so that when Google says, no, we've never talked to the NSA, they might be telling the literal truth. And then there's this, like, weird information about what kind of information they can get. They can get stored communications, instant messengers, real-time notifications of emails, real-time notifications of instant messagings, email, voice over IP, which is phone calls, and then some other things that I don't really know what they mean, videos, And then my favorite, so there's a list of the content types they could, and there's a one-letter code for each content type, and there's a special code dot, which means they get multiple types of data, and somehow I bet they use that the most. So there's this like weird boxy thing about how the data is obtained and all the various NSA systems, technical and human, that it goes through. And then there's this box on the left, providers, Google, Yahoo, et cetera. And that's the box I really wish I had a little more insight into, but it doesn't seem to be in these slides.
All right. Well, we're going to analyze that and try and figure out what it all means. But I guess it's good that more information is being released slowly, but surely.
Oh, I do want to say one more thing. So the Washington Post annotated these slides because they're a bit hard to read. And they say that this box means that the FBI uses government equipment on private company property to retrieve matching information from these companies. And as far as I can tell, that's not actually shown in the slide, but the Washington Post, which has read all the slides, even more that they still haven't shown us, is very clear that they're saying that this is what's going on. And I find it hard to just ignore that.
Okay, we're going to be taking some phone calls. Phone number is 212-650-5782, 212-650-5782. Just note it now, because if we call, you undoubtedly get cut off before we get to you, because we still have a few things to get to, including some of your mail. You can write to us here at Off the Hook, oth@2600.com. We love hearing your letters, feedback, insight, that kind of thing. Here's a letter from Bob. I enjoyed the discussion about terrorists and surveillance. And for a lot of reasons, terrorism is not a sustainable model, and you are correct that most of them are just plain incompetent. But I must disagree that the terrorists assume they are being monitored. They might, and they might take countermeasures, but there is a fundamental principle of terrorists. That principle is that they are mentally ill, and when a person is willing to blow themselves up in the name of religion, that means they are crazy. But did you just indict the entire military system of the United States? I think maybe you did. God we trust and all that? Because I see a lot of people getting blown up for various religious-type reasons. Not always religious, but it's at the basis of it all. And many, many places. It's, I know what's being said here, but I just think it needs to be put in perspective. Continuing here, they might not even care about being spied on. You can't stop crazy. The real question is, what is the larger agenda here? Or maybe there isn't one. Maybe the government is just like the terrorists, incompetent. I really enjoy the show. It's stimulating and thought-provoking. Thank you, Bob, for that letter. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I like the quote, you can't stop crazy, because maybe you can't stop crazy, but the real question I think at hand here is, how much are we willing to give up to pretend that we're doing something to stop crazy?
I think it's a mistake to label your enemy or somebody who wants to destroy you as crazy. A lot of people said that about Ayatollah Khomeini when he first came into power in the late 70s, that he's insane, crazy. And no, he wasn't insane. He was very intelligent. He was very focused on what he wanted. It was just completely alien and different than anything we had seen before. And we need to try and understand that so that we can deal with it and not just dismiss it, because that's a big mistake. You're completely underestimating people.
But it's just so much easier to dismiss something that's different from yourself and you don't understand.
Absolutely. That's crazy talk. Alex.
Yeah, I think Bob makes a really, really wonderful point there. When the notion of self-preservation goes out the window, I mean, so does rationality to a very large extent. He could be quite right. Terrorists maybe just don't care.
Yeah, but you know, I feel the same way about people who go marching off to war just because somebody tells them to, and without thinking about, you know, like people like Bradley Manning and Ed Snowden, without actually thinking about what this means in the terms of human life. You know, just following orders. How many times have we heard that through history? We need individuals in our military, not robots.
I don't know that we need so much of anyone in our military.
Well, if we're going to have anybody in the military, I'd rather they be thinking people than just automatons. Let me read another letter. This one is from a longtime listener from the Pacific Northwest. That's how they signed the letter. On the show yesterday, which I guess is last week, you discussed the speculations about involvement of companies like Google, Facebook, and Microsoft in the PRISM program. The media is stating that the NSA has direct access to their servers, and the subsequent denial by these companies has raised a lot of confusion. Some of these companies have been requesting to release some information about their compliance with FISA. I think a couple of past events make the situation more clear. One, the request by government entities that ISPs retain data for longer periods of time. Two, the construction of the NSA storage/computing facility in Utah. Three, the leaks by Mark Klein, which described the secret NSA room in an AT&T facility. A very reasonable explanation of the PRISM program is that the NSA has scaled the operation, which we learned from Klein's leak, and that they built a facility to handle the data they gather. They didn't seem to have much luck getting the ISPs to do it for them. It's always important to discuss user-level countermeasures. So I'd like to point out that they may not be effective unless true end-to-end encryption is used. That is, if you use Google for email, you should use something like PGP to encrypt your email. You may be sending an email over SSL such that it arrives at Google's SMTP servers through an encrypted tunnel, but once that email gets routed outwards to another SMTP server for delivery, it's quite likely being done so in the clear. If the NSA has access to major backbones, they have access to these emails. Thanks for keeping the dialogue going as always, and thank you, longtime listener from the Pacific Northwest. Go ahead, Mike.
Dear longtime listener from the Pacific Northwest, the thing that is insane about this program is that even if you manage to work PGP, which is, you know, something that people can learn to do, it is actually not helpful in the face of these programs which record, remember, not the data that you transmit, but what they call the metadata, which is still a form of data. But they, if they know that I am sending emails to Emmanuel, that is what that might be what they want to know, and they can draw links. And, you know, if he's up to something, they might think I'm up to something, or vice versa, even if they cannot read the actual content of the communication. So it's worse.
All right. One move on to a couple of other topics. We will be taking phone calls in just a moment. Again, that phone number, 212-650-5782. Here's a letter from John. Monday morning, I heard a frightening, pulsing, piercing alarm. I thought I was carrying a bomb. No, it was a flash flood warning issued to my mobile phone by the National Weather Service. Touching OK on the warning screen turned it off, but the loud alarm and message repeated every hour. I had to turn the phone off. How many people experience this? You experienced this the same thing this past week?
Yeah, last Thursday. I was driving in rural northeastern Pennsylvania fairly late at night, and a cell phone in the car started beeping in this really strange pattern I'd not heard before. And I looked at it, and it said flash flood alerts. And within minutes, I was encountering roadblocks because the roads were flooded, and I had to find all these detours. It was pretty crazy, but it worked. It was really impressive.
So I did not hear these tones, because apparently if you have your phone, at least with Android phones and some other models, on silent or vibrate, as I usually keep my phone, then you don't hear the tones. I appreciate that, but...
You know, I had the tones all queued up here on the browser, and it disappeared somehow. You want to just keep talking for a moment while I try to get it back?
I mean, I will say, though, that... I saw on my phone that there was a flash flood warning, and I really didn't care... because I live and work in Manhattan and in very, you know, tall buildings. So I don't know what I was supposed to do with this information. It just made me inclined to ignore it, which makes me inclined to ignore this whole program. So if there ever were an emergency that was an actual emergency, I feel like I would be primed not to pay attention.
And I do have some info about these messages. They're referred to as the Commercial Mobile Alert System, or CMOS. And they can either be a presidential alert, an imminent threat, or an Amber alert, which is like a lost child alert. The text parts of the messages cannot exceed 90 characters. So they're not SMS. There's like a special app built hard-coded in your phone to receive and show these messages. The messages may not contain a URL. An opt-in is not necessary to receive these messages. However, you can opt out through your mobile carrier. And the messages can be originated directly from the White House, from FEMA, the Federal Emergency Agency, or from your state emergency agency, or by local emergency operation centers. But I have a concern about these. Emmanuel, are you concerned about how this could be abused?
I'm more interested in how it can be abused, but concerned, I guess, sure.
Well, I mean, as I stated, it worked really well for me last Thursday. It's really valuable for certain kinds of emergencies. But I'm a little concerned about it being abused by fear-mongering government authorities to possibly strike fear into the public, into accepting maybe a government power grab in the name of public safety. I mean, once this infrastructure is in place, it's going to be used, and mission creep happens.
Mm-hmm.
So the White House can, without any additional authority, send out nationwide CMOS alerts to hundreds of millions of mobile phones, along with any associated text message it wants. It's like a totalitarian's dream machine, in my opinion.
Okay, we have the actual ringtone or whatever it's called that we'll play. Alex, hold your phone up to the microphone and let's hear what this sounds like. And I guess that's supposed to get your attention. Apparently it works, but that's not, it's not actually a ringtone. It's like an app that's on your phone that's generated by this signal, right?
I mean, I actually read the source code to, or part of the source code to the Android version of this app this afternoon, and it's got a file inside that other implementations. It's a very simple sound, so you could generate it without a file.
Okay.
But you can't, I guess, set that as your ringtone because unless you get the file and then set it manually, because then I guess you'd be hearing it all the time and you'd ignore it when there was a flood.
And I have a dumb phone, so I can't get that tone at all. So I'll just drown, I guess.
Well, Emmanuel, it doesn't have to be a smartphone. If it's a new, if it's a fairly new phone that's CMAS compliant,
uh-huh,
it will have that. It's. I think the government's trying to require. I think the FCC is trying to require this to be all new phones to be CMAS compliant. So it can be a dumb phone with, no web browsing or anything. It could be like most a basic feature phone, and it could, like my mother's phone, is a very basic function feature phone, and it's compliant.
And Bernie, can you tell me, is it possible to opt out of this service as well?
Yeah, as I was just saying, you don't have to opt in, but you can contact your mobile carrier, and you can opt out of it.
Okay, that's good to know. We also have some other interesting little feature that was sent in to us by a listener named John. This is something that actually happened at the George Zimmerman trial a day or so ago concerning, they were trying to get a connection going using Skype, and it didn't quite go so well. Take a listen.
Discussions are based on different topics.
Okay, and as I understand the excerpt in State's Exhibit 201, there are chapters on how to testify, as a witness, as well as on psychological or criminal profiling?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. No other questions, John.
Next, Rob. Is that his phone that's giving us?
It's someone calling the destination. I get it. Just get the client.
I really do pull up this computer.
That's all right.
Hold on. I'm just client.
I got to tell you, there's now a really good chance that we're being toyed with, just so you know.
Is there another phone that we could call into? That's not a cell phone? Is there a landline?
I'm trying to call in on this.
Okay. Turn down the volume. Is there another phone?
All right, so I want to jump in here. We have Lisa Bloom, our MSNBC legal analyst, joining us from Los Angeles, also here in the studio, Faith Jenkins. And Faith, in the break, when our mics were down, I had a chance to, because I've never seen this before. You said it's common now for witnesses to use Skype to testify. Obviously, this is a big mess because somehow they've gotten the contact telephone number to go in there and mess with this guy's testimony. We can see the same numbers calling back and forth.
Right. Perhaps the number came up on the screen mm-hmm. when he was called or called in, and that's what's happening. But
okay, that was a bit of fun there on the major networks, and that was from MSNBC. Let's take a couple phone calls from our listeners. Again, phone number 212-650-5782. Anything on your mind concerning the whole NSA mess and various other things that we've been talking about today? And while I wait for the phone to ring, since it just got hung up on, our email address is oth@2600.com. And go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you guys?
Okay, fine. Speak up.
I'd like to say hi to Bernie S., who I haven't seen in 17 years, and last time I remember making red boxes with him in 30th Street Station.
Oh, wow, I remember that.
Yeah, I just wanted to address the letter about Islam. I just wanted to say that, sometimes we have to take into consideration that the people who are blowing themselves are faced with, you know, challenges that they feel are equal to persecution. And in the Quran, it tells them that death is better than persecution. It's no different, in all honesty, it's no different than when someone, unfortunately, in that terrible event on 9/11, was in the top of the tower, and they saw the fire behind them, and they made the choice to jump out the window. It is really no different. But, you know, I think that, well, I think Emmanuel was onto something. You have to watch how you approach, you know, labeling the people who are doing it. Not saying that it's right, because I think it's terrible, you know, any death. But I think that's especially terrible. But we have to look at the circumstances behind the culture and the axioms that are put into a religion that make a person do those things.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. And again, our phone number is 212-650-5782. If there's anything that's on your mind concerning the things that we've been talking about, concerning the NSA and various other topics that are hot these days. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
How you doing? Wow.
Come to the phone, quickly.
I'm surprised. I didn't think I would get you guys.
What, you make the phone call and run away?
Oh, no. The lamp just fell.
Okay.
I was just listening to the
small
show.
Price to pay.
I'm, like, amazed at how they got us like sheep, where it reminds me of, like, a parasite. You know, they don't care how they hurt you, but it's just they need you to be able to survive. And all these, like, corporations and so forth, it's like their main business is to be in business to live off us. And that's why we can't. Everything that from the intent, it's like it's nothing new. The intent from the start was like that. With the IRS and all these things. And these things aren't really even... They're just put in place to live off us, to take our money. When we breathe, they make money off us. When we go to sleep, we die, we come. And it's like, I think the good thing that the universe is doing now, it's like, once we start asking the questions, why, it's like giving us some answers. You know, you have, like, have a blank piece of paper, and the teacher say, well, here's the test. And you say, well, there's no what you ask the question. Then you have something on the paper to answer. Now we're starting to ask instead of just going along. And those that empower the parasite, they're really afraid of us even just asking questions. And speaking to the my service, my computer service, what they did, I just got a call today out of the blue. And it was like a phone message, and they asked me if I wanted to have this information, so if a storm come, they wanted to be able to alarm me, and I opt out. And it said, okay, if you opt out, thank you. But I'm just saying that because it just happened to me today. But I'm glad we're trying to wake up, because we were just like, I don't know, we were asleep for so long. But anyway, I like the show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call. Thanks for all those comments. And a lot of what you say applies to both governments and to social networks. We're basically the product. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi there.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, the only reason why I called was I was very interested in when you broadcast the emergency tone there from your telephone. It sounds to me exactly like the emergency alert tone that alerts radio stations to automatically go on the emergency network to broadcast emergency radio announcements. And I'm just wondering if by broadcasting that tone, if it is in fact the same tone, if you might have triggered any other radio stations to actually think that WBAI is broadcasting some sort of an emergency announcement.
Well, I'm aware of chaos outside, people running around screaming it, but I think that's just normal station business. But Bernie, perhaps you could speak to that. I know that the tones are similar.
Same two-tone combination, the DTMF combination. However, the duty cycle is different. In other words, it's a brief tone, a longer tone, then a tone of a different duration. And in fact, according to FCC regulations, which we researched before we broadcast this tone tonight, because we want to be compliant and all, you know.
Yeah.
So it is okay to do what we did tonight. However, the other types of tones, the EAS tones, which have a different duty cycle, it is against FCC regulations to broadcast that over the air unless it's a real alert. So thanks for asking. It's a good
opportunity. I understand that. That's why I called, because you can always get a good answer from you guys, but it just really made me wonder.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much for your call. And Mike, you had something.
Hey, Bernie, what does that mean, duty cycle?
Yeah, what
it's
is
like
a duty cycle?
The amount of time the tone is, and the time, the duration between the tones, and how long each tone is. And in this case, there's several different duration tones with different duration silences in between them. So that's,
okay,
that's what duty cycle means.
Right, well, we're getting a duty cycle coming in right now. Let's take that. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, hello. I have a call for Bernie and a guest.
Yes, you're on the air right now.
Oh, thank you. This is falls into the category of, this is interesting. I got a call on my cell phone from a caller unknown, and the number is decouple zero. 10 zeros.
Yeah, that just means somebody messed with the caller ID info, and they can send whatever numbers they want.
Sometimes
I see.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're placing a call with various internet call technologies, the caller ID doesn't come up, so it turns into zeros, stuff like that.
And if you get a Skype call, I think it's always 661 or something. So, yeah, it doesn't really mean anything anymore. It used to. Mean something when you got caller ID. You could believe what it was. But now, every time I see a call from the White House, I know it's just one of my friends. It's not really the White House anymore. They stopped calling. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Yes. Interesting show.
Thanks.
You know, I want to take issue with the use earlier in the show of the word terrorist. Someone there said that terrorists who sacrifice their lives, who risk their lives, are by definition crazy. But I would say that maybe sometimes, but it's people who are totally sure that what they're doing is for the best, you know, such as Julian Assange, such as Ed Snowden. Those people are also risking their lives, and they know it. No one would call them crazy. They're very committed, and they're passionate, and they're heroic.
Yeah, and
Bradley Manning, too.
Bradley Manning, absolutely.
Bradley Manning, definitely Bradley Manning.
Yeah.
And Snowden just as much as said that in his interview with Glenn Greenwald. You know, he said, you know, you could sit there and you could collect your large salary for not much work, and you could, you know, keep quiet and just watch your shows. But if you really want to live like that, or, yeah, and know that it's going to get worse with each generation, he said something to the effect of, I know that if the most powerful country in the world wants to get you, they're going to get you. And maybe, it, you know, he said basically it's worth it. So that's not crazy, and that's not being a terrorist.
Absolutely. Good words to end on. Thanks for that call. And you can write to us, oth@2600.com, with your comments. Maybe we'll read them next week, but we'll be back next week talking about this and other things. I believe, Rob, there are meetings coming up this week?
Yes, indeed. 2600 meetings everywhere in the world. 2600.com/meetings to find your local one.
All right, yeah. First Friday of the month. Happens all the time. Again, oth@2600.com. A manual for Off the Hook. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show here on WBAI. Have a good night.
Rasta.
Hey, I love that song. What was the name of that song?
Gangsters.
Gangsters? By who?
The Specials.
The Specials? Yeah, well, that's great. Oh, I know Gangsters, or it should be called Gangsters. You know, but that has nothing to do with the management of WBAI. You know, just twist that one away.